The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
Into the latest edition of ESPN FC. I'm Kay Murray, joined in the studio by Alejandro Moreno and Stevie Nichol. We've also got Julien Laurent with us as we look back on some midweek action, starting in La Liga, where Getafe were up against Atleti. Getafe still without a point this season, and it was a comeback win for Atleti. Two goals from Luis Suarez to seal all 3 points for Los Colchoneros. It looks like last season, Ale, Suarez popping off in a crucial moment to decide a game.
He absolutely did. But before I speak about Luis Suarez, I have to talk about the actual MVP of this game, and that is Carles Aleñá for Getafe, who got himself thrown out in the most ridiculous and unnecessary challenge that you can think of. In the middle of midfield, he goes and kicks the back leg of Mateus Cunha. Now he's red carded. But up until that point, while Atletico Madrid had possession and had sustained pressure, they were not creating real opportunities. There was a shot, sort of a half volley from Antoine Griezmann, and that was about it. It's not like David Soria was making saves left and right. This was a struggle yet again for Atletico Madrid to find creativity, to find opportunity, to find shots on goal, and to actually score the goals. But then the red card happened, and then you give Luis Suarez opportunities that he did not have earlier in the match, and a guy who, quite frankly, can barely move. When you put him in goal-scoring positions, he hasn't forgotten how to do that. So you give him service inside the 18-yard box, inside the 6-yard box, and he's going to do just that. He's going to score game winners, and he's going to score important goals for you. Atletico Madrid, escape, and I mean escape El Coliseo Alfonso Perez with a result that, quite frankly, up until the red card, didn't seem likely.
And they'll take it. Jules, it's still not happening for Antoine Griezmann, though.
No, terrible again tonight, today, being taken off after just over an hour, which was right. I expected him to be taken off at halftime, to be honest. We've seen Cholo Simeone making substitution at halftime, actually in a very similar game to the one from today against Espanyol, where they were 1-0 down at halftime. He made the 3 substitution at halftime, and that changed the game, and they were much better, or certainly better in the second half, and ended up winning 2-1, albeit in the 100th minute or 99th minute. And I thought today Griezmann would be out at halftime. He lasted 15 more minutes, but again, it's not good enough. But I don't want to find him excuses, but this is a team that is not functioning anywhere going forward. There's nothing, there's no rhythm, they don't play between the lines, there's no patterns of play with the ball. So I can see why he's struggling to express himself, but I still think that it's also down to him a lot to do much better than what we've seen so far in the last 3 games.
Early days though, Stevie, right?
LEDs, yes, but when you have the ability that this guy has and the amount of money that he's gone for in transfer fees and wages and the rest of it, to not be able to tell that was actually Antoine Griezmann out there. And it's been like that since he got to Atletico Madrid. You know, they must be thinking, wow, this is not the guy we thought we were getting. If you thought he was bad at Barcelona, he's been worse in the games he's played this season for Atletico Madrid. I mean, just horrendous. And I agree with Jules. To help him, there has to be some sort of, how does this team play so that he can figure it out? Because I do not know what this team's trying to do. They don't pass it from the back all the way forward and try and cut people up. They don't hit it early to the striker, and then they all join in. You know, they don't look to get the 2 fullbacks forward the way likes of Liverpool do with Robertson and Trent. I don't know what they do. It's almost like just because they're bigger and stronger and they have some ability that they get points.
He'll be back, won't he, Ale?
Antoine? Well,
it's hard to put your hat on it and say, yeah, isn't it?
Honestly, I wouldn't be so concerned if I didn't think that this was a continuation of what we had already been seeing at times with Barcelona. And you thought, okay, well, his move to Atletico Madrid was to free him up, to just kind of remove all these chains that he felt at Barcelona because of the pressure, because of the presence of Messi, whatever the excuse, whatever the reason may be. And now he's going back to Atletico Madrid, where he was really, really, truly successful. And then you see the performances, and it's not just one, it's not just two. You see it time and time again. And now what's really scary for Antoine Griezmann and from his perspective is that now you're expecting poor performances. Now when you see him out there, you're like, yeah, that's the way he's been playing. So again, the scary part is when he takes a shot on goal, you're like, hey, he took a shot on goal. There he is. Or when you see him with France, then you ask the question, why is he not playing like this for his club?
You're stretching the on goal bit.
Well, I know. I know.
Try 30 yards high and wide.
I know. The point being is that you get surprised that he's actually having an impact on the game, even if it's just minimal impact. You're like, oh, there he is. We hadn't seen him at all. That cannot be the standard for Antoine Griezmann or for a player that, again, so much was expected of him.
As for Atleti, though, they did actually win, right, Jules? And they've got Luis Suarez if they do need digging out of a hole going forward.
Yeah, that's right. And I guess that's all you take away from this game, because, again, the performance was not good enough. And he has not been good enough since the start of the season. Even if they're top of La Liga right now, it's still not good enough. I'm sorry, with the ball, the players they have, they should do much better than that. And again, we saw that tonight. Ali was right. The turning point is the red card. Without the red card, I really don't think they win that game. After the red card, it's a bit easier. And again, what we can give credit to Simeone is the substitution, because both Hermoso, who came on, and Bersacco, who came on, provided the assist for Suarez. So, okay, that worked. And we've seen it again, the Espanyol game. Again, his substitutions worked, his coaching. Okay, but there will be a time where that doesn't work anymore. You know, you've got great depth in your squad, and Rodrigo de Paul can come on and dictate the game. Good. But there will be games where that's not enough. And I think with the ball, they're so far away from being a functional team. They're so dysfunctional with the ball because, as we've been saying, there's no structure really going forward. There's no patterns of play. We're not really sure. He changed the formation today again before going back to what he has been doing before, and it's still not working. So I think there's a lot of work to be done. And I guess the best thing for them is that the other teams, well, certainly Barcelona, are not up to the level. So they might still be okay and win it again, but they will have to work much better with the ball.
Barcelona have their own troubles. Real Madrid are having to have comeback wins. Who's favourites right now?
Well, I guess you'd have to say Atletico Madrid. Because if you look as though you're not quite sure what you're doing and you're sitting top of the league, you can only get better. So being so bad at being top of the league and you can only get better, does that make them favourites? Kind of makes them upside down favourites.
What I would say about Atletico Madrid is that if you go over the last few games that they have played and the results that have come from those games, you're talking about late game winner by Luis Suarez. You're talking about late game winner against with Thomas Lemar against Espanyol, or a 0-0 tie against Athletic Club Bilbao, a game that they could have and should have lost because the good opportunities, real good opportunities in that game fell to Iñaki Williams and Asier Villalibre from Athletic Club. You look at the Villarreal, that they were losing the game late and it's an own goal, a ridiculous own goal that happens for Villarreal. You can't sustain this level of good fortune over the course of a long, long season. At some point, those things turn around, and now those things are happening to you. So they have to be able to pick up their level of performance if indeed they're going to win this title. Coming into the year, into the season, I would have said Atletico Madrid because they seem to be the most consistent team. Right now, that consistency is going the wrong direction. They are consistent in terms of how poor their performances have been because of what we expect from Atletico Madrid. And Real Madrid has been better than what we thought they would be. You don't want to give Real Madrid momentum and then you trying to catch up in the end. So if you're Atletico Madrid, you have to turn this around and elevate your level of play really, really soon.
And then there's Barcelona. And they played out a 1-1 draw with Granada yesterday. And after that, Koeman said this. There wasn't space to play inside. There was more space out wide. And we had to fight for the second ball in the box. It's time we changed our style. But it's what the game required. It depends on what we have available. How are we going to play tiki-taka? He said that, tiki-taka, not tiki-taka, if there is no space. Look at the squad. We did what we had to do. Today's Barca is not the Barca of 8 years ago. Ooh. He's turned into Captain Obvious at the end of that, Ale.
Yes. Now, I'm watching this game, this Barcelona match, and I'm thinking to myself, remove the Camp Nou. Remove the uniform, bring in Rory Delap and Toni Pulis, and this is Stoke all over again. These are balls floated into the box, hoping that the big guys get on the end of it and somebody scores a header. That, it is not Barcelona. And I mean not Barcelona. It's not the identity of the club. It's not the culture of the club. It's not what this club wants to do and the way they want to play. Now, if you're Ronald Koeman, what I would say is there is an argument to be made that, you know what, it's good coaching. You made a coaching decision during the game because you felt desperate enough to say, this is the only way that we can score a goal today. We're just going to lump balls into the box and hope that Ronald Araujo gets on it, that Pique gets on it, that somebody gets on it, that Luke de Jong gets on it, and maybe we get something out of this game. But on the other hand, you can say, this is further evidence and a further admission from Ronald Koeman that they are light years, and I mean light years away from being part of the elite conversation in Europe. This Barcelona team is unrecognizable. It's just another team that is trying to grind out results to somehow maintain themselves at the top of the league and somehow remain competitive. But this is not a team that you can build on in the future.
This is the latest stain against Ronald Koeman, and I'm sure Jules could have told us so. Jules, what does his future look like right now?
Well, first of all, I have to say he's an embarrassment. This is embarrassing. That press conference was embarrassing. That performance was embarrassing. His decisions were embarrassing, I thought. Last week, he was telling us, if this team has a future, it's thanks to me. Is that the future? Is the game against Granada the future? Is this what we're going to see? Gerard Piqué playing as a number 9 for the rest of the season? I don't want to see that. And I think Barcelona deserve better, much better than that. And you're right, they're in transition. At least transition with someone who has ideas, who can take this club, this team forward, even if it's with the kids. And I think Xavi is the perfect guy. Maybe he's not completely ready yet. It doesn't matter. He will get ready and he will learn. He will learn on the spot. He will learn the job. But please, please, I don't want to see that ever again, because that was too bad. I think his days are counted if they're not over already. I think they already thought the week before, after the Bayern Munich defeat, which, by the way, could have been far heavier than the actual score was. They already thought back then to get rid of him. That Granada game convinced everybody else that he was not the right guy for the job, full stop. Now they will have to pay him off, of course. We're talking about 6 million euros, maybe a bit more. That's a lot of money for a club who doesn't have any money, but I think it's the right call to make. And then finding a replacement. And again, I think Xavi will be perfect for the job at this moment in time.
How is this Koeman's fault? Can you please tell me how this is Koeman's fault?
Well, why isn't it?
He's got a bag of bones to choose from.
Against, okay.
He's got a bag of bones to
Granada.
Choose from. Against Granada. He's told you. They had. I've never seen a team pass the ball sideways so many times. And what do you think Granada's going to do? Of course they're going to sit tight and not let you go through the middle
so
of it.
So none of this
but
is
on somebody
Koeman.
On the field of play has to take a chance and try and play a little 1-2. Or somebody has to move. You can't just turn around and say Ronald Koeman needs to go. I mean, Ronald Koeman, we don't... This is kind of the Arsenal talk. We keep thinking Arsenal is of the Wenger era, where they were dominating everybody. Barcelona are where they are because the players they have aren't that good. Cheers. And I don't care who is in charge of them. You're going to get exactly what you got for what, 60, 70 minutes before he stuck two big giraffes up front and kicked the ball long, because he had no other option, because he doesn't have anybody on the field with the imagination or maybe even the ability to create something when there's 10 men standing in front of you, in front of the goal. That's just the truth.
Jules.
I mean, Koeman is a bad manager. He's always been and will always be. And maybe the players are to blame. Of course, Stevie, you're right. And the talent is not the talent that they used to have, of course. But don't tell me that with that team, you can't do better than what we saw against Granada. And not just Granada, what we've seen this season. Okay, last season, there was a little bit better when they went through at the back, and we gave him a bit of credit for that. He changed a few things. They played slightly better, but they bottled it at the second half of the season anyway. They had some horrible performances, and that was a team with Messi. Now they don't have Messi anymore. There's still nothing in the game. I mean, I look at De Jong, and I'm not talking about Luke De Jong, who should not be there in the first place. But Frankie De Jong, I'm looking at him and I'm thinking like, man, I feel for you. I really feel for you. What kind of team is this around you when you are such an amazing player? Memphis Depay is the same. The poor kid has to carry this team on his own because collectively there's nothing, because Koeman has beat nothing with his squad. I agree with you. This is not the best squad ever, but this is a squad that is much better than what we saw against Granada, where you had nothing in the game apart from crosses. 1,000 of them. Oh, good. They could cross the ball, but actually how many of them were good, how many of them connected? I thought in the first half they had 38 crosses or 28 crosses, 5 of them landed, 5 out of 28. I mean, come on.
Right, so who's, what manager's going to do any better? You've just annihilated the team, the players, so what manager is going to come in with a magic wand and get this team to play better? They are what they are, they're not good.
Should they get rid of Koeman, Ale?
Well, I think right now he's a dead man walking anyway. So if indeed, as a club, you recognize, look, Koeman is not the answer. And he's not going to be the answer now, nor in the future. Then I think you say to yourself, all right, you know what? This season is not going to work out anyway. So we might as well get a jump start on what the future of this club is going to be. And so you make the decision according to that. If Koeman is not part of your future, then you get rid of him. And you take the losses as you do, and now you just kind of bank on making a decision that sets you up for the future and trust that this decision that you make is the correct one. But what cannot happen, and I think this is the part that I agree with Jules, is that this club cannot fall this down, that's this far down the ladder. And I recognize that the players, again, there's a limited amount of talent out there in the field. But it has to be better than Granada. It has to be better than Granada at home to be sort of hanging on against Granada and hoping that just crosses, blind crosses into the box and the giraffes that Steve is talking about get on the end of it. Man, it is a stark contrast to what we all think Barcelona is all about. And we all have come to appreciate what Barcelona does on the field because of the precise passing, the movement with the ball, without the ball, the ability to find passes between lines, those little through balls, those little gaps that they always find, the triangles. None of that is happening regardless of what players are out there on the field. Now, it's much easier when you have Xavi, when you have Iniesta, when you have Messi. Absolutely. But the identity of the club is no longer there. And so this was a desperate call by Koeman in saying, look, we're not going to get anything out of this game unless we do this. And if that's the reality of Barcelona, man, what a sad reality that is.
What chance have they got of getting an established manager? Well, why would Roberto Martinez, for example, put his reputation on the line to take over a club that clearly is in a huge hole financially, and who on the field, we all talk about the potential of all these young players, but that's all it is. That's all it is. So is a Roberto Martinez going to take that job? And if you don't, then it's a huge gamble if you put Xavi in charge of that team.
Here's
huge.
A question I would ask you, Stevie, that, and this is an honest question. Would you rather have a Barcelona team that does what they did against Granada in the last 20 minutes and grind your way through the season? Or would you just take your losses and say, you know what, this year is going to be a struggle, but we're going to stay true to who we are? And that's, I think, the decision that Barcelona has to make as a club.
Well, I think you've got to try and find the person who, A, can handle it, and B, who's going to try and who may take them forward. Mm. I don't think that's Xavi. It's too big a gamble.
Well, Jules, you said Xavi. Why would he want to take it now?
Because, one, because they need him. Two, because, like Ali said, this season could be written off. I mean, it's still very early, but there could be no pressure at the end. They will finish top four. They might not win La Liga, but they will finish top four. And Xavi can come in and say, okay, what we've seen in the last 18 months was not what we're all about. This is what we do. We're going to do what we used to do. And young players can do it. And it might not work out straight away. It might be a bit more difficult to implement all that sort of DNA and all those methods and the methodology that Xavi has, which is the same as the great Barca, of course, with less talent on the pitch. But at least you'll have an idea. You'll have that DNA, the identity of your club back. And it might not work straight away, but at least you will try and you will show much better stuff than what we saw against Granada and in other games this season. And those kids will learn. Tell me now, what is Pedri learning from Koeman? Nothing. What is Gavi learning? What is Youssouf Demir learning? Nothing at all. At least Xavi comes on and says, look, this is what we're going to do. This is how we play from the back. This is how we can do overload. This is how we can do triangles. Because Koeman doesn't do any of that. And I would rather take that gamble. And if I was Joan Laporta, I would take the gamble and say, you know what? There's no pressure. Go and teach them and try to build something than what we've seen so far.
Jules, as a young player, you learn more from the experienced guys around you on the field playing than you do from your coach or your manager.
Mm. But and
somebody like Pedri, who's got other kids around them, how is that going to bring his game along? You know, the guys like Pique, who are not capable of performing at that level anymore, how is that going to help Pedri? You know, Pedri going into Barcelona of 6 or 7 years ago would have been perfect. But right now, he's got the team on his shoulders for a start, and he's learning his trade. How's he going to get better when he's got a bunch of kids around him as well? It's not going to happen.
Well, let's take a look at La Liga's table, shall we? With all this worry surrounding Barcelona in eighth right now. Atleti are top, but Real Madrid and Valencia in second and third have games to play. So the table could change by the time those games have been played tomorrow. And here are the games coming up. Sevilla taking on Valencia, 1:25 p.m. Eastern. And Real Madrid will be in action against Mallorca, 3:30 p.m. Eastern, right through Thursday when there are more games. And then you've got Cadiz taking on Barcelona. Passion, drive and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights and more. Whether you're into speed, power or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. Scenes of Lionel Messi being subbed off in the game between PSG and Lyon. Many were questioning why this happened in the 75th minute, especially with that little interaction between Mauricio Pochettino and the player as well. But it turns out that Messi is actually injured. So what more can you tell us about this situation, Jules, as we welcome Frank Leboeuf in as well?
Yeah, that's right, Kay. He's got a little thigh injury. Nothing serious, I think, just above the knee, which he had in the second half against Lyon on Sunday night. And that's why Pochettino took him off. Nothing else, just purely by precaution. Messi was not happy because even if he had that little niggle, he wanted to continue and play until the end in a game that was in the balance, really, for PSG at the time. And that's why he was not happy. But they had a long chat today and yesterday as well and cleared the air completely. There's no issue about them. And then I guess the fact that he cannot play and he's out for the game against Metz away on Wednesday night shows that Pochettino was probably right to have taken him off.
Frank, do you think that too much is being made of the fact that the three of them, Mbappe, Messi and Neymar, haven't set the pitch alight just yet?
Well, you know, it's a question of time, you know. Everybody has to be patient. We always try to find, you know, something which could go wrong, you know, in between the guys or for one of the guy. Last week was Mbappe with his toe. Today is Messi with his knee. Even if I wonder why, if he had a knee problem and especially a bump on his knee, why he didn't have a back of ice, you know, to resolve quickly or quicker the problem. But I think everybody has to calm down, wait for a little bit for them to settle down, especially Messi, and after we're going to be able to judge them to make a statement. But right now it's too early. We should talk about other things about Paris Saint-Germain who don't go right, especially what I think the midfield zone, the defense, but forwardly, I would say that we have to wait a little bit to know more about them and how they compose together.
And of course, Jules, you're not worried and have no concerns about the M&M, do you?
Absolutely not. I think they're going to win every single trophy they're entering. No, I'm kidding. The thing is, there are a lot of things to sort out. What formation do you play in? A formation that suits them the best. And what I mean suits them is they can express themselves with the ball, of course, but more importantly, maybe for the team and for the balance of the team, what formation will help you as a team, because they're not going to defend much. So all those defensive transitions that you have to cope with, what is the best formation to do that? You know, who will play? Do you go 4-2-3-1 like we saw against Lyon, which I thought worked a little bit better than the 4-3-3 that we saw against Bruges in the Champions League, especially to recover the ball and as high as possible on the pitch. Against Lyon, the conceded expected goals was lower than against Bruges, so I guess that's a little improvement. But there's still a lot of things that they have to work on, they have to sort out, find the right formula, the right solutions to the problems that they have. But the front three, everybody always says great players can always play with each other. I don't believe in, oh, they might struggle, that they might fail. I don't think so. The rest of the team may be behind them, but I think that front three is safe to say that sooner rather than later, they will hit form and then will be very hard to play against.
If Jules is not worried, then I'm not worried. And you can catch more from Jules on the latest Gap and Jules podcast, wherever you do get your podcasts. Did you know less than 10% of Americans own an e-bike? Here's why that should change. Studies show e-bike owners actually end up exercising more, plus getting outside more. If you're looking for a balanced lifestyle and everyday adventures, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes. They are the number one selling e-bike brand in America. Their bikes are typically foldable, pre-assembled, and have serious range up to 150 miles on some models. Check them out today at electricebikes.com and add some more adventure to your week. That's electricebikes.com. Little Carabao Cup action. QPR eliminating Everton on penalties. Quite the penalty shootout, as you can see. 8-7 they advanced on penalties. One player who wasn't on the pitch, in fact, we've not seen much of him at all lately, was James Rodriguez, as we take a look at Everton's starting 11. And it looks as though he won't be at Everton much longer. What's the latest, Jules?
The latest is that he's on his way to Qatar. I mean, we knew from the beginning that Rafa Benitez didn't want him in the squad, that he was not going to play him. So it was always a case of finding a new club for James Rodriguez. The problem is that what we saw at Everton, and yes, he started well, really well, but after that, he went back to the James that we saw towards the end of his Real Madrid career, which is a real shame. But I don't think any big clubs who could afford his wages, for example, would take that gamble on. So unfortunately for him, because he's only 30 and I think he still has probably a lot to give, but he will have to go to somewhere more exotic, because I don't think right now anyone would be ready to take him on.
What happened to James Rodriguez's career, Ale?
Well, that's a great question. 2014 World Cup, and how outstanding he was in the biggest stage there is. You would have thought his career would take a trajectory that would suggest he would be one of the best players in the world. And so Real Madrid comes calling, and there's some early returns, and you think, okay, there he goes. There he is. That's James. And then it just flattened out, and it flattened out with club. It flattened out with country. Now he's not even called to the Colombian national team because even when things were not going well with Real Madrid or Bayern Munich, he always had the Colombian national team. And every time that he put that jersey on and he was wearing the captain's armband, you saw the very best of James Rodriguez. So you could always lean on that and say, you know what, still something there. Now you don't even get that because he doesn't get called in by the Colombian national team. And so there's nothing to lean on here if you're a James Rodriguez or a James Rodriguez fan and not just kind of say, you know what? This is quickly becoming or has become a story of what might have been, what could have been, and really what wasn't.
A player of that talent, though, Stevie, don't you think that they could have maybe tried to work something out for Rafa Benitez and him, keep him around?
The problem for people with talent is that they have to have the discipline and the professionalism to go along with it in order to produce it week in and week out. And I don't think he has that. I'm not arguing he doesn't have the talent, but he doesn't have those two other things. And when you're the type of player that he is, where you, to get the best out of him, you need to give him a free role, it goes two ways. So if you're getting a free role, you have to produce. And if you're not producing goals and you're not producing assists, if I'm the coach, eventually I run out of time with the guy. And eventually his teammates run out of time with him as well. Because you can only run for somebody for so long when they're not giving anything back before you just say, why is this guy on the field? So, talented, yes, but it has to be the other side of the game, the desire, the discipline. You know, the injuries he's had, far too many injuries. That tells you that maybe he's not looking after himself properly as well.
But too many injuries to not make it in another top five league side, Jules.
I know, but he's had his chance. I mean, Monaco was good. And then, as Ali said, the 2014 World Cup happened. He moved to Real Madrid and there was a high back then and then a lot of lows as well. Then he had a chance at Bayern Munich and then at Everton. And now, I don't know, again, you're 30, you're on huge wages. I'm not sure who gives you another chance. And the thing with Benitez and Everton is they're playing a system in a way that they can't have a free number 10 there who doesn't really defend and needs the ball all the time. And you almost need to build your team around him. Otherwise, it's not going to work. And what big club right now is going to build his team around James Rodriguez? No one. And that's why we are in this situation. That's why Qatar and those kind of places, destination, and no offense to the Qatar clubs or their fans or anywhere, or the players there, but that's why this is the only thing on the table for him right now. And, you know, I would think even MLS, right now you think twice about taking James Rodriguez, or certainly you want to have some sort of assurances, like Stevie said, that if he comes, he's fully committed and ready and with the right mindset, not just coming to play a few games and then not really having that kind of serious attitude that you need to be to play at that kind of level.
He's 30, Frank. You went to Qatar at the end of your career. What do you make of this situation?
It's too soon. It's too soon, and it says a lot about his mentality. I mean, when you talk about Rodriguez, you have to face criticism, you know, you have to be ready to be critical because, I mean, that's a waste. That's a real waste. I think the guy lost the pleasure of playing football and chose money. And it says a lot, you know, going to Qatar at 30, where you still maybe have hunger of playing football at the top level, and top level it's in Europe, or maybe it's in Argentina or Brazil, or, you know, elsewhere, but it's of course not in Qatar. I went there with Batistuta, the Dubro brothers, the Said, Dugarry, Yero. We were at the end of our career. We had nothing to prove. We were almost completely toasted. But we were almost 35, so that was quite normal. It's too soon for him. It's sad in a way, because with the talent that he had, and I have to agree with Stevie and what he said, I think that guy had no discipline because he had no consistencies, and that's a shame. And we might talk about Coutinho the same way, because those players are, of course, a big talent, but don't give enough.
What's amazing is that it is clear that the coaches that James Rodriguez has worked with, they must have delivered the same message. James, you want to play, you got to work, man. You got to work defensively. You got to sacrifice for the team. You can't just be floating around. They would have delivered the same message to him time and time again. And obviously, whether that was Zidane or anybody else, they did not get through. Because clearly, James just said, no, I play the way I want to play. Well, now he's going to do that somewhere else, and it's nowhere near the elite level that his sort of talent would think, or you would think, would entitle him to be a part of. That sort of elite player, that sort of elite team, and that's part of the issue, that he felt entitled to play in these clubs, and now he's nowhere near it.
I thought you were going to say something then. If you have any questions ever on a topic like this, make sure you do send them into Extra Time and the panel will answer them for you. Extra Time is available on a daily basis. What you need to do to see it is subscribe to our ESPN FC YouTube channel.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match. With Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/FC. Just go to Indeed.com/FC right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on the podcast. Indeed.com/FC, terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Here are the rest of the results on the day, all across the cup games. Liverpool and Man City, both with good results for them. Brentford with a big result as well, 7-0. OK, coming up, Carabao Cup schedule. Chelsea taking on Aston Villa. Manchester United against West Ham and Wolves against Tottenham. It's like the Premier League. All these games available on ESPN+. As is Club Leon against Seattle Sounders. League's Cup final Wednesday at 10 p.m. Eastern. And speaking of the League's Cup, we have some news. The expansion. All MLS and Liga MX clubs will participate in the League's Cup starting in 2023. Both leagues will halt seasons for a month.
Okay.
The official competition, it will be of the CONCACAF Champions League. The League's Cup champion in 2023 earns automatic qualification for the CONCACAF Champions League round of 16. And clubs finishing second and third in the League's Cup qualify for the opening round of the same competition. Thoughts, Ali?
Now, in my days as a player in MLS, the league didn't even stop for World Cup qualifiers. I must have missed a ton of games when I went down to CONMEBOL to play for Venezuela. To see now that the league is stopping a whole month to facilitate this League's Cup expansion, it tells you of the direct effort that exists between MLS and Liga MX is to continue to build this relationship, to work together, to grow in each other's markets, and to make sure that this is a relationship that is not only of growing their own products, but is growing the product together. It has to do with the 2026 FIFA World Cup as well, to kind of showcase and show off the infrastructure and the things that are available in this region and as to why that World Cup will be a success. But it also paints a very clear picture that this relationship, Liga MX and MLS, is one that is here to stay, and that the long-term goal, as you read between the lines and you start seeing some of the decisions that they're making and these tournaments that they're creating, is to potentially blend these leagues together. How they go about doing that, I have no idea. But clearly there's an effort here to continue that relationship and to grow that relationship deep into the future.
Stevie, do you like it, that idea? No?
Clubs and coaches are going to hate it. You know, it's all political. As Ali's said, but from a competitive standpoint of view, right now, MLS teams struggle with the amount of fixtures they have. And if you're going to stop MLS for a month, when are teams supposed to play these games? And to play them, they're going to have to play more midweek games. And MLS struggles to get people in the stadiums during the midweek. So I don't like this from a competitive standpoint. it's 100% all political, it's all money orientated. So for the clubs, for the coaches, for the players, it's just more on their plate.
Let's take a look at the MLS games that are coming up midweek. Midweek games.
Okay.
Miami taking on Nashville and Chicago Fire against the Revs.
Hey.
Both of these games on Wednesday, first at 7:30 Eastern and the second at 8 Eastern. All of them available on ESPN+.
Picture this. You arrive at your hotel. You have an important online meeting lined up with clients from all across the country. You have your laptop open, ready to begin, and the Wi-Fi is so terrible, you can't even connect. These types of stressful situations happen all the time, but they don't have to. When you book a room at La Quinta by Wyndham, you have access to their free high-speed Wi-Fi, so you can take care of those critical emails, join your meetings on time, and even unwind by streaming your favorite shows without having to worry. Tonight, La Quinta. Tomorrow, you shine. Book direct at LQ.com.
ESPN FC, available daily. Don't forget it, 7 days a week for all the latest football topics. And fun as well. What about this from Mario Balotelli, now playing his trade in the Turkish Super League and scored two goals today to salvage a 3-3 draw for his side at Adana Demirspor. That celebration was to tell the Besiktas manager, hey, look at me now, because he once said that he had no brain.
Okay.
And so this is him saying, yeah, I don't have a brain, do I? And here he is salvaging that 3-3 draw at the death, as you can see on the clock as well. It's a little, how do you like them apples from Mario Balotelli. Now, this got me thinking, why do footballers, or is it true that footballers hold grudges for a long, long, long time? Because it was a long time ago this coach said this about him.
Absolutely.
Really? Do you have like a little black book?
No, you just store it in there. For when right. the time comes, and in the football world, it's actually pretty small, because you either know somebody or you bump into other
this
people.
This was more than 8 years ago.
Well, that's minute.
Oh.
That's minute. Listen, somebody disrespects you, you remember it. You remember it forever, until you get the chance to either do what Mario did, or you actually meet the person and talk to the person, depending on the circumstance.
So are you saying that the manager, this coach, in question, was wrong?
No, I'm not saying he was wrong. But clearly Mario felt disrespected. Listen, when Mario did...
If someone says you've got no brain, I think you have a right to feel disrespected.
Yeah,
right?
But it looked like it when he was at Manchester City and he came to MLS in the All-Star game, and I still can't work out what he was doing or what he was thinking. So I can imagine somebody would come out with a comment like that. It's just, if you're a player, you remember it. And then when you get the opportunity...
Imagine all the things that have happened in Mario Balotelli's career to end up where he is, where now his highlight is to go to a coach who 8 years ago made a comment...
Maybe that's why he went there.
Hey!
Maybe he went there for that very reason. Well, Ale, did you hold grudges in your career?
I hold grudges right now, okay?
You footballers. Yeah, I'll tell you what, you're cut from a different cloth. Anyway, that's all we've got time for on the latest edition of the show. Thanks so much for being with us. If you'd like a little more, you can join us for extra time. Welcome into the latest edition of Extra Time. Oh, Frank's rubbing his hands together. Oh, that's usually a good sign. Yeah, he's ready.
Does he know the question?
Maybe. The first one's for all
course.
Of you. You do?
Of course.
Okay. Been scanning through Twitter, looking at them all.
No, I don't.
All right. This is for all of you, but I'm going to start with you, Stevie. For Stevie, Ale and Frank, what was the best excuse you had or heard for missing training?
Oh, wow.
The usual. Ran out of petrol. Run out of gas.
Run out of gas.
Run out of gas.
How can you ever get away with that one? They'll say, come on, you must have known the gas tank was... was low.
Well, see, here's the problem. I've actually run out of gas.
Here's the problem. I believe you.
Well, that's the thing. I couldn't argue because it does happen.
Right.
I had a sponsored car when I was at Liverpool, and I had M53 Ford. Sponsors Steve Nicol on the side of the car.
Right.
So I was going through the Mersey Tunnel. I got halfway, stopped, car stopped dead. And I'm like, oh, I can't believe this. So I phoned the garage. So I spoke to Tom. I said, Tom, see, I said, listen.
Who's Tom, by the way?
Tom was the owner.
Oh, okay.
Tom was
right.
the owner.
Okay,
of the,
thanks.
Of the dealership.
Did you have to go up a payphone
so
to do this?
I phoned him.
You couldn't just ring him on a mobile, right?
Couldn't, no.
Did you, so you must have gone to a payphone,
oh, no, no.
Right?
So when I got home. When I got home.
How did you get home? If you ran out of gas?
I got a lift.
So you left the car in the tunnel?
Well, the truck came.
Okay.
Okay, all right.
The truck came and took it, and then, man, and. I can't remember how I got home. How did I get home?
Maybe you're a yuppie with one of those big car phones. Hello? No?
You know what? Maybe one of the police. You know what? I think one of the policemen gave me a lift home.
So, hello, we've got Stevie Nicol here.
I think one of the tunnel police gave me a lift home. Because we're only 10 minutes for the tunnel.
Right.
Anyway, I called Tommy Fail and he said, right. I said, oh, Tom, the car's on its way, blah, blah, blah. He said, right, have you run out of petrol? I went, no. Of course I didn't run out of petrol. I didn't come stupid.
Well.
Anyway, he called me back about 30-40 minutes later and went, oh, so you never run out of petrol, did you? He went, you absolutely did. He said it was dry. There wasn't a drop in it. So anyway, so when this player said to me, I ran out of petrol or gas, I went, okay.
There we go.
Don't do it again.
Good, nice, good karma. All right, LA.
I remember actually a teammate of mine who did not run out of gas, however, put the wrong gas in the car, put diesel instead of regular gas. And so obviously, once he got on the highway, the car just went crazy and shut down on him. And yes, that is the reason as to why he was not available in training.
So it's two gas stories.
Yeah.
All right.
Donnie Whelan did that as well. Guy played for Liverpool.
Right, yeah.
He did the same, put diesel in it.
Yeah.
And the thing just stopped.
Yeah, the engine said, nope, no thanks, no, it's not happening.
Well, it's expensive to get it all cleaned up.
Yeah, I bet, I can imagine. What about you, Frank?
Well, I will go with the gas story, you know, if you don't mind. That was with the I bought a very old car. It was 1963 Bentley car that I bought, but at some time I had some problems, so I went to the gas station to fill up the tank. But it never switched on again. So I was late, I had to call a cab, and I was at Chiswick going to Harlington. At the time we had the training ground close to Heathrow. And I turned up like 45 minutes after the training session started. And because I didn't have the chance to have a mobile phone like Stevie at the time, because we were in 1996 or 1997, I couldn't warn anybody, so I was late.
And what did your manager say?
Well, we didn't care. He didn't care about that. He said, Frank, you're late. You're going to see Wisey, Dennis Wise, and he's going to tell you how much you owe to the players and to the club in order for us to have a nice dinner. I say, okay, coach, no problem.
Oh, okay.
That's what
so
it is.
Petrol, gas, that's gas. The one, is it?
Yeah.
Okay. Now, there are also the players that just don't come to training at all for the whole week, and they've gone in some sort of trip home or whatever, and they come back, played on a Sunday, guys disappear, they show up on Friday, and it's like, well, where you been? No, I went home. What do you mean you went home? No, went to visit the family, but you didn't tell anybody. So, what, you expect you're going to play?
What, and they don't even pull the, oh, I didn't realize we were in?
No.
They just disappear?
Uh-huh.
And just take the consequences?
What was the centre forward's name?
Diego Serna.
Diego Serna.
Yeah.
We signed him at the Revs. I was the manager at the time.
Oh. Mm.
And he turned up. He turned up on the Thursday. Was supposed to. This was he just signed. It's not like he signed and then he came that day or whatever. He signed and then he turned up on the Thursday, so I couldn't play him on the Saturday. So the following week, he didn't turn up to the Thursday again. So I said, Dale, what's the problem? He goes, well, you know, since the move from Miami to here, you know, I've got stuff to sort out. I said, well, you got to tell me that. He went, okay, don't worry, coach. Following week, turned up Thursday again.
Yeah.
So I never played him. Never played the guy. And then he ended up getting, we got rid of him, we transferred him.
And getting talked about on tonight's extra time.
Because he never appeared. And he was the nicest guy. He always had a smile on his face.
Well, of course.
Wasn't worried.
He was gone from training until Thursday. Of course.
Yes.
He was nice and fresh.
He was paid for nothing. Of course he was paid for nothing.
So, of course, this question gets in because it's from Kay Murray's number one fan.
Of course.
Who also has a September birthday like me. Happy birthday.
Oh, yes.
He probably wouldn't do that, no. So, did any of the guys ever play for managers who liked swearing on the touchline or in the dressing room? Oh. Frank? Who liked swearing?
Not really.
It's unusual if you don't.
We had Graham Riggs, the head coach of Rugulit, and after Gianluca Vialli, was very good at swearing, you know, in the dressing room, on the touchline. That was pretty fun. But we had also, because I like to talk about Dennis Wise today, we had Dennis Wise on the field. So we needed anybody else, you know, to swear everywhere on the field, you know, on the touchline when he was there and in the dressing room. So perfect.
Is that perfect then?
Well, it's called industrial language.
Right.
It would be unusual if anybody didn't swear. That would be the question. Was there anybody you ever...
Was there anyone who was more potty mouthed than someone else?
No, everybody.
Well, everybody's the same.
Everybody was like the same.
Including yourself.
Including myself. On the touchline, I was... On the touchline, I've got to tell you, I got suspended maybe four times when I was at the Revs, in the 10 years I was there, got fines and suspensions. But I'll tell you what, it would have been 44. If the fourth officials could have actually understood me, it would have been 44 times. Fortunately, they were like that. What's he saying? When I was giving them a mouthful.
You know, Kay.
You got away with it. Tell me.
You know, Kay, what happened to me, it's in fact, because I was listening to those guys, and they were swearing all the time, you know, I was always putting the F word, you know, every time I was talking. And suddenly somebody a little bit more educated than a football player said, Frank, you speak very well, but you know the F word, every sentence shouldn't be in it, you know. So erase that from your memory, because that's not good. I said, but everybody does. I said, yeah, but it's not because everybody does that you have to do it. I said, yeah, you're right. So I don't do it anymore.
So they got you into trouble. What about you, Ale?
No, I think as a player, you know when the manager is about to go, when he's about to blow up, right? You see the mannerisms, you see the quick walk, you see everything is leading up. And of course, you know that the team hasn't been playing well or somebody has made a dumb mistake. And now he comes in, he's fired up, and you're just thinking, oh, here we go, baby. This is about to get creative. And what I don't think managers realize while they're doing it is how creative they get with the swearing. How the variety of what they bring up once they go. Once you know that he's lost it, he's fully gone, you hear the creativity. And if you end up winning the game or end up turning around or whatever, it actually becomes a funny thing to talk about afterward. If not, you know the continuation is coming at the end of the game. But the creativity of the managers when they're swearing, I think that's the part that people don't quite realize.
I love
that.
As a player, head down.
Uh-huh.
Do not make eye contact with the coach. Because if you do, you're going to get picked out.
Yeah, keep your face. Don't look at them. No,
and you. Keep your head. And you.
Are you? All right. Frank, Ezio would like to know. Frank, you often talk about the problems in PSG's hierarchy. Where is the actual problem? Do players circumvent the coach? Is this Leonardo or Nasser's fault?
Well, you know, from what I was told, that's mostly coming from Nasser, who in fact loves the players. He loves football as a fan, and he loves the players. So, in fact, when players have a problem, let's say Neymar, a year or 2 years from now, wanted to go to see his sister for her birthday in Rio. He asked the coach said no. The day or 2 days after, when they came back to the training ground, Neymar wasn't there, and it's an example, it wasn't there, and the coach, you know, wondering where was Neymar, and the answer to him that Neymar was in Brazil because Nasser said yes to him. So that's the main concern, and it came out so many stories about that the fact that they don't consider the coach and they go straight to the chairman. So it doesn't work. It cannot work like that. You have hierarchy. The coach decides for everything which works with the dressing room. If there is a problem, the coach can go to the general manager, which is, in that case, Leonardo. And Leonardo can confess something to Nasser if needed. But it cannot be the players going straight to Nasser because it's a big mess. That's as simple as that.
All right, let me follow up with you, Frank, very quickly on this one. It's a nice question. Has an opposition team's national anthem ever given you goosebumps while on the pitch?
Not while I was playing, but I have to say that the American, the Russian, the German, the English, I love them. I love them.
I will not.
Yes, the English too. Yeah, I love the English. I'm sorry, Stevie.
What about you?
Could ask Frank that question about... No.
Maybe not.
About the 100 Englishmen? No.
No.
All right.
No, Stevie, no. The answer is no.
Okay.
Not on this edition.
Right.
Go on then. Has this ever happened to you?
Are you kidding me?
I'm the same as Frank.
What, you like six different national anthems?
At the time, no. But now that I'm finished, I love listening to, you know, when the rugby's on and you have the Welsh national anthem. I love the haka that New Zealand do. I love the Australian one. There's a ton of them that I like that I actually listen to when they're playing.
And England. Mm.
I turn the TV off when the English one starts.
Ale.
That might say yes. France.
Very nice.
France. Yeah, France is the one it certainly catches your attention.
Italy and Brazil for me, I like that.
Yeah, Brazil as well, yeah.
Right, Stevie, Alex would like to...
you cannot do that. Brazil and Italy looks like a carnival stuff, you know. It's I love the Italians and the Brazilian, but it's not a national anthem, you know. It brings... you want
it.
A party. When you hear that, you want a party.
I love both of them. I do. I love them, Frank. All right. Just the two for me, not six like you. All right. Alex says, Stevie, what drill was the most successful and most influential in the training sessions during your days at Liverpool? And did you insert any of those same techniques in your MLS days?
Oh, good question.
Nothing particular. Just the attention to detail when you're passing the ball, more than anything. Probably some of the pre-season stuff, the physical stuff. But as far as nothing particular. Just the attention to detail. When you're doing something, do it properly or don't do it at all.
I like it. Yeah. It's a little Stevie coach coming out there, isn't it? All right, for Ale, Don Hutchison's math teacher would like to know, what's the next step for Vinicius Jr. to become a world beater if he isn't one already? Are you surprised that the Vinny-Benz partnership is blooming even after Benzema's comments from last year where he asked his teammates not to pass the ball to Vinicius?
Well, the first thing that I would say about Vinicius is that if he continues to add goals to his game the way that he has early on this season and does that consistently over the course of a season, then there is no doubt that at that point you can call him world beater, world class, elite, whatever you want to say. That's the one part of his game that is missing. He was always dangerous. He was always a guy that would challenge you defensively. Now he's adding final product and perhaps the most difficult part to do, and he's done so beautifully early on this season. As to his relationship with Benzema, it's not surprising because in a locker room or on the field, when things are going well and guys are scoring goals and you're winning games, those guys become your best buddies in the whole wide world. And so it's at times a relationship of convenience in that I'm better because this guy is better.
and he's better because I'm better. And when we're working together and we're scoring goals and we're playing off of each other and everything is working in terms of what we're doing together, then it doesn't matter what I said. It doesn't matter anymore. Because right now, it's working. Do you think now Vinicius is looking back to whatever Benzema said? Nope. He's just enjoying what he's doing right now, and so is Karim Benzema.
You know, part of maturing as a player as well is about feeling accepted by the other guys in the team, particularly when you play on a team like Real Madrid. It's that belief. You know, the fact that Benzema didn't believe in him last season at a certain time, it's why he's telling him not to pass the ball to him. It's nothing to do with he doesn't like him or thinks he's a bad guy.
No, because yeah, he'd said that he's the most helpful player to him on the pitch.
Right, he just felt at that time that Benzema didn't believe in him. And now, not only does Benzema look as though he believes in him, but the player himself, once he gets that from his teammates and the big name players like Benzema, then all of a sudden it starts seeping into him. So he now believes. That's the difference. And that's where your consistency comes from. When you actually believe that every time you step on the field, you're going to do it.
You know what, Stevie's with all the nice coaching talk today.
Oh, absolutely.
All the inspirational quotes and everything.
I mean, I'm ready to go. I want to warm up. No. Let's go. Let's do this.
All right. Lastly, be careful, LA.
Okay.
I don't mind who comes ahead of me.
Ooh. Okay.
I do mind who I come ahead of.
Okay.
Tariq would like to know, for LA, rank the ESPN FC hosts by their command of the Spanish language.
Oh, this is very easy. Ooh. Do we go from 1, 2, 3 or from 3 to 1?
Okay.
Let's go 1, 2.
3 to 1.
No. No.
Oh, the other, okay.
Yeah, let's go.
Okay, who's got the best Spanish?
It would be Seb.
Of course.
Right? And then, no doubt about it, 100% is K. Murray, second place. And last, I mean by a country mile, that is Daniel Thomas, whose Spanish is horrendous.
Muchas gracias. That is all we have, and that is the right answer. Thank you very much,
Dan.
How long
did Dan live there? How long?
5 years in Madrid.
Not long enough to know that it was Campeones and not Champiñones. Anyway, hey. ESPN FC.
Danny's back tomorrow, by the way.
Danny's back tomorrow.
Hey, Danny boy.
So yeah, make sure you give
Hasta
him an easier
luego.
Time, guys.
Hasta luego.
We're happy to have him back. Hasta luego.